Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
3, 2, 1, and ladies and gentlemen, we're back. I'm bringing on Ayadosa today. And the reason I'm bringing him on is he posted a video on Facebook. And it was about dreamers and not accomplishing your goals and dreamers' depression and other things. And it struck a chord, you know, because I'm a bit of a dreamer myself. But yeah, I just wanted to get a little more insights from you. Like, you know, how did you figure that stuff out and maybe walk people through the steps? Because I thought it was super insightful. And hopefully we can link to the video too in the show notes.
Sure. Yeah. So quick synopsis of the video. So my name's just back out on me from the US. My name's Ayadosa. I traveled around the world growing this business for learning foreign languages. And I have always been someone who's had lots of ideas, just a flurry of ideas, 1,000 epiphanies a minute, as anyone who knows me will tell you. And it's great, you know, it's kind of who I am and what I love to do is come up with new things and invent things. But at the same time, I always struggle with execution. I always struggle with consistency, reliability, and finishing things. So a big struggle of my life for the past, you know, decade has been trying to hack my own brain to figure out how to do these things. And struggling with for years, it eventually kind of led to, first an anxiety attack in 2016. And then I fell into like a deep depression, like the deepest one I'd ever been in. I've always been kind of going through different mood swings for the same reasons, but it got really bad and like really pressure in 2016. At the end of 2016, I was just trying to pull my way out of it. And I was just kind of shocked at how bad it had gotten. And I'm just sitting there looking at myself like, holy shit, like what's wrong with me, you know? And actually the way that I started to kind of crawl out of it was I started to stream of consciousness journal every morning when I woke up. And I was like sleeping in really late trying like, okay, I gotta get stuff done today. And I get nothing done. I'm just watching YouTube videos and then go to bed at like 4, sleeping in 2. It was like really just pitiful to look at. And I started stream of consciousness journaling because I would wake up with a swirl of thoughts. And then I'd just write until I had no more thoughts. And then I'd reread the passage from the day before. And after like a week of doing this, I had noticed a pattern in my language. And I saw that I kept using normative verbs like I should, I have to, I must. So I'm like, oh, I slept until 2. I have to do this more. I should do this tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. And I remember I was like, what is it? This kind of stuck out to me one day. And I'm like, wait, I use this a lot. And I started to underline every single time that I did that. And I realized like every other sentence had that. And I'm looking at it like, wait, what is this? In retrospect, I wasn't in that state of mind anymore because I'm just reading the journal entry from 5 days ago. I'm like, where did I learn this obligation to succeed? Like, I don't have to do anything. Like, why is this a thing? And from the beginning of that, it was just a question. I said, where did I learn this obligation to succeed? And then this kind of thought popped in my head. I'm like, oh, perhaps this is a thing called ego. And that kind of set me on this journey of just researching a lot, experimenting a lot, and all these other things. Took a sabbatical off of work and really kind of introspected for all of 2017. And I just came to lots of conclusions that you can get into if you want to. But that kind of led to me coming up with these different systems and figuring out what the major source of these things were. And one of the major pieces is this concept of integrity of word. And if you think back, you know, through the past week or month or year or your lifetime, and imagine someone had recorded everything you ever said, and they had a transcript on file, and then they went through and highlighted every single time you started a sentence with the words, I'm going to do something, or I will do something, right? Like, oh, I'm going to start a new business, and then I'm going to learn how to ski, and then I'm going to do this, and this is going to happen next, and then I want to do this. And if you looked at all those things and itemized it, what percentage of them did you actually make come true, right? And basically what I find, and there's a lot based on personality, is that dreamers and people were typically visionary people, very often extroverted, but not necessarily, but have a high openness to experiences and ideas. So these things, ideas come to us and we feel the need to express it. The problem is when you express it and verbalize it to someone, you kind of lose the energy and the impetus to actually act and do the thing. So when I realized that about myself, I was like, wow, I talk so much shit and I say all these things and I tell all these people and I'm really good at talking. So I can get people inspired and energetic about this idea I have for the company or for the next project or whatever. And then in the end, it doesn't get done. It doesn't finish it. Things get too hard or they get too, you know, they take longer than expected. I lose interest. I get bored. It gets too stressful and I abandon ship and start a new thing. And the thing is, when I'm in my early 20s, it's really easy for me to be like, whatever, you know, just start again. It's all good, right? But when you keep doing that over a period of time, eventually, you know, I got to like, 26 or 27, and I just had this graveyard, dragging behind me of failed projects, and it was just too big for me to ignore anymore. And then that was what's building up a lot of stress in my head and kind of this feeling of being a failure and all this kind of stuff. And when you get in that situation, you're not quite sure why it's that way. And that's how I realized, I went through and read a bunch of stuff and went through a bunch of different workshops and different things. And I realized like, if I made it so everything I said I was going to do, I did it, how would my life look? And that's the kind of the point of this video I made. It's a thought experiment I had earlier last year. And I said, if someone had a gun to my head and said like, always do what you say or I'll kill you, right? I'll pull this trigger in your gun. How would that affect your behavior, right? Because the thing is, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to sign up for a gym membership and, you know, get six pack abs and lose all this weight. You say that, but if someone had a gun to your head and they're like, okay, do it. By Friday, you're done. You're like, oh crap, you know? So you would probably think before you even said the thing in the first place, right? And so you go through a bunch of psychological steps that I kind of outline in the video, because I actually did this. I didn't hire someone to put a gun to my head, but I got really diligent on how I used language to describe things. And at first I went like a whole week where I made no promises to anyone, no matter how small. People would say like, hey, so you're gonna see you later at the party? And I'm like, perhaps. You know, and I would, even though I was planning on going to the party, I wouldn't say I'm going to, because I wanted to just, you know, I call it a word fast, just have a complete abstinence from saying you're gonna do anything. Then after that, I started writing down every single time I told someone I was gonna do something, just so I had like a more mindful awareness of it. And then I made sure to do it. And then after that, I started getting this momentum, having 100% success rate on completing things. And then with that momentum, I started to commit to bigger and scarier things. But now, because I had that, you know, wind behind me, it pushed me through that resistance, which before would have stopped me. And so just by, you know, my language, my business is in language learning, so I've always been paying close attention to languages and how we use language to express ourselves and persuade people and stuff. So it all kind of stems from those observations. And so that's basically just the video. You can watch the thing to get a better sense of how it all takes shape.
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. I mean, you know, I think we all go through that, through this execution problem, right? Like I find for myself, I don't know if it's burnout, but I'm super productive sometimes, I'm super unproductive sometimes, and now I just tell myself it's okay. But I do see telling people how great your project will be, it does take a lot of energy out. I find myself working much harder when I just put my head down and work, and maybe I have some kind of a enemy in my head or someone I'm going to compete with without saying anything and just waiting to one day just be like, look, got you. You know, that type of thing. Like, I find it works much better for me than if I'm just screaming out, like, oh, look, I'm starting this project to everyone, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, and this has been, like, empirically shown as well. They call it a motivation high, where if you get people to, you know, talk and tell 10 people about their idea and what they're going to do versus just kind of writing it down quietly in a journal and keeping it to yourself, the vision is inside of you, and you might have actually a brilliant idea for that blog post or the business or that artistic endeavor, but it has to, when it's inside of you, it has to come out somehow, and preferably it comes out through action. And there's certain people who are not as good with language, so the only way they can express is through action, and those people usually do pretty well for themselves. But some people, we have this other outlet of language, and we can just kind of paint the picture of what it might look like if we did it, and then that's, like, satisfying enough. And, you know, I always tell people that, like, empty promises are kind of like empty calories. You know, when you go to, like, McDonald's drunk at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning, you're just like, oh, yeah, I want to eat these Big Mac and fries. And there's never been a time in human history where someone's eaten at McDonald's and then been like, oh, I'm really glad I did that. You know, like, you just feel like shit afterwards. And then afterwards, the craving and the hunger is even more 10 minutes later. And you feel sick and dirty. And that's basically what it's like to promise someone that you're going to do something and you're going to create something. In the moment, it feels great. And you have a very strong urge right before to do it. But you get no nutrition from it, you know? And if you just kind of suppress that urge, or just, you're not even suppress it, but just kind of notice it and accept it and let it go, and then don't indulge it, don't eat the McDonald's, don't tell that person on the subway your brilliant new idea, just keep it to yourself. Then you go home and cook yourself a nice meal, nutritious, and then do the work, and, you know, step by step, it gets done.
Yeah, I like that. I just watched the stand-up, which was awesome, and the guy said the same thing. Like, nobody eats McDonald's because they like McDonald's. You know, nobody does that. It's just one of these things where, like, look, either you're broke or it's just convenient, or, you know, and the slogan for McDonald's should be just fuck tomorrow, because there's no value in that food whatsoever. And that's funny when you said that. It really hits home. But, you know, the visionary thing, I find I'm a good visionary. I'm good at a couple things. I'm a horrible manager. So that's why I need managers in my company. And I'm really bad at things I don't like and things I'm just not good at, right? Like, working on my weaknesses is probably the worst thing for me to do. Because I will watch Netflix all day rather than work on my weakness. No, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I just, maybe it's just at this age, you know, before, like, when I was younger, I would try, you know, I would say, like, I'm going to raise all my weaknesses. But now I'm like, I'm not going to do that. You know, that 10,000 hour rule, right?
Yeah.
So imagine you're working 10,000 hours at something you're good at. And now you have to put 10,000 towards each of these weaknesses. And you're just like, it's not going to happen. Maybe it's just being realistic.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, it relates back to the McDonald's thing. Like that guy said, no one wants to eat McDonald's, yet it's the most successful food chain in the world. Why is that? And the thing is, we have all these behaviors that don't really serve us. And it's very easy to get caught up in the thought loop of, oh, something's wrong with me, I'm just a terrible person, blah, blah, blah. Or you're just a biological organism which has urges and it just works a certain way. And when you understand how it works, so I spent a lot of time in the past year just studying, like, you know, psychology and, you know, cognitive behavior therapy training and stuff like that. And you're looking at it and it's like, okay, this part of me that really doesn't want to do this administrative work or logistical kind of things, is that because I'm just a morally flawed human, or because just the way I'm built is, this is not what I like to do, but that guy likes to do it. You know, I have employees who like to do those things. And guess what? Those people don't like coming up with the big picture ideas and the new product ideas and the new marketing angles, right? And if you look at these things kind of from a demographic point of view, it's pretty common where there's a negative correlation between creativity and consistency, right? You know, and some people can manage both for different reasons, but you are who you are. And like you said, it's not a really good use of time to find your biggest weakness and try to, like, just invest all your energy into correcting it. The way I think about strengths and weaknesses is I divide my weaknesses into two categories. there's weaknesses that, you know, that all of them I suck at, but some of them, some things you're weak at, affect your ability to collaborate with others. Those are the weaknesses that I invest my time in developing, things that help me play better with others. Because the other weaknesses, if I find people to collaborate with and then they take care of that, the only way I can collaborate with them is if I'm not a dick or I'm not, you know, I'm someone who respects other people's time and stuff like that. So if you can identify your weaknesses that are stopping you or holding you back from socializing and collaborating, work on those so that you can find the people to fill in those holes so you can go all in on your strengths. Because at the end of the day, what's going to give you both financial success and, you know, general levels of happiness and psychological success is spending more of your waking hours doing the things you love and that you're good at and getting better at. Otherwise, if you're stuck in a situation where you have to do the thing that you really don't want to do, you're probably going to spend the whole day looking at Netflix and YouTube videos before you do it. And then when you do it and it's done, you feel no satisfaction and you're like, what's the meaning of life? Why am I even here? This is all useless, right? And it's really bad. It's a really bad cycle. And it's funny because I have friends and employees who, even little stuff like calling the bank and talking to someone on the phone for like 30 minutes, like I'll put that off for months, right? Like I just hate that kind of stuff. And whereas, you know, one of my employees, like he'll do it right away. And so when I finally realized, like, man, stop doing these things you don't want to do. Like, yeah, you could theoretically do it, but at the cost of like so much energy and psychological well-being, and yeah, just stupid, just inefficient. So that's how I look at it. Like, obviously you can't let all your weaknesses just kind of control your life. You have to set up the system where you can leverage your strengths. But when you know what you're doing, you know you're calling the bank because that's a necessary step to, you know, develop your art and develop your strength, then it becomes, you find the motivation to go through it. But if you don't have that motivation, you'll never do it.
Yeah, I definitely don't recommend for everyone to just leave all their weaknesses. Yeah, I have never met anyone successful that's not a good communicator and can't put their ideas across and can't focus. I mean, there are a few things which we all have to get better on, you know, even if we're not so great at. It's like being at the gym. You know, at some point, your squats and your deadlifts will stall if you don't take care of your core, right? And I'm not talking about the abs. I'm just talking about the core in general. And, you know, we usually don't want to work on the core because it's boring, but it's one of these things like, well, if you don't, then you're stuck. You know, it's just, but that's a different type of weakness, right? I'm talking more about stuff like I'm not a good programmer, right?
Yeah.
Or a developer. So me tweaking around with WordPress, you know, I mean, there are a billion Indians doing that much better than I'll ever do it, you know?
Yeah.
So just things like that. But yeah, and obviously there are a few.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned working out because I was. That's the only realm where you should go after your weaknesses. Like, you should go after balance and, like, okay, if you really hate stretching, then you should stretch. But if you consolidate all your willpower into, like, fighting through your weaknesses in the physical realm, then, you know, that's good. Believe when it comes to, like, your career and the things you do for fun and art, like, yeah, don't waste time on weaknesses.
Yeah, and it's super funny too, right? Because when you start working out, like the simplest way is just go after the big four, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, yeah, start doing the squats, deadlifts, presses, and pulls. But then, a couple months in,
you get injuries and...
Well, yeah. Even if you don't get the injury, you'll just be like, hey, there's something, you know, something's off, something's missing.
Yeah.
And you will start seeing these little things, right? Which like, oh, yeah. What if I just worked on this? What if I just work on that? And it comes naturally. And I think it does so in business too, but I just think going after too much at once.
Yeah, you can't. You got to choose your battles.
Yeah, but at the same time, you have guys like Gary Vee, which I'm not a fan of, hustling all the time. You know, just keep doing things, you know, just screams at people. Just shut up and hustle. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know, like, how productive is that? Just go hustle. I know a lot of people working so hard and not getting anywhere, right? It's like I talked with a friend of mine, and I said, look, you can use the 10,000 hours and work yourself into a corner.
Yeah, sure. It's not the whole puzzle. And I find a lot of people, you know, a lot of my thinking and research goes a lot on personality and, like, looking at different personality types and stuff like that. And I find everyone, one of the biggest mistakes everyone makes is they assume that everyone sees reality the same way they do, or everyone experiences reality the same way they do. And you see this everywhere. It's like, I don't understand how this person's so dirty. Like, doesn't he get frustrated from being dirty the way I do? It's like, well, obviously not, because he's just really dirty, right? Or, I don't understand why people don't just hustle all the time. Why don't they hustle all the time? When I was younger, I was always just shocked at how people didn't really think deeply about stuff. And I'm like, how do you just go live your life? Didn't you think about this a little bit deeper? And they didn't, like, because introspection is something that comes naturally to some type of people, but is at a cost. I'm not as much of a action person because I'm a think person. Now, I've been doing a lot to round myself out in that respect, but yeah, when I listen to like a Gary Vee or you listen to other people and they're like, just hustle. All that does for some people who are just kind of wired that way is really inspiring. And you're like, yeah, shit, hustle. And then they actually get far because they naturally know what the hustle about and it feels good to them. Other people, they try it for a week and then they stop and then they spend the rest of their lives hating themselves for not being hustlers like Gary Vee, you know? So you really have to find your own, you know, for each personality type, there's someone just like you who's figured it out. And if you can find a person who's figured out the path that is the best for you, then do what that person does. Don't try to follow other people's paths, you know?
Yeah, I think sort of. But even if we follow someone that's done something that we want to, we can take the same steps and it's not going to happen the same way.
Sure. Yeah. So try your own path. Well, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's, there's a point where if you want to accomplish things, you need to move away from this external motivation, which does work, but I mean, you have to continually listen to new stuff and just, you know, keep getting hyped up, which is a waste of time too, to internal motivation, right? I don't know, have you found any strategies for doing that? Because I think that's a breakthrough for a lot of people. If they can just stop worrying about the external as much and just be like, look, I can drive myself.
Yeah, I mean, that's a major focus of mine for the stuff I'm working on now. Every year I have I don't set goals. I have like a single word intention. So 2017, the word was state because I had that kind of breakdown in 2016. And I was like, okay, these are just psychological states. I'm going to spend the entire year just kind of observing what state of mind I'm in. And if I'm feeling bad, kind of reflect on, like, oh, what just happened to me in the past hour or day that might have caused this? And just kind of detaching from the state entirely and just understanding it. And after reflecting on that for a year, that's where I got a lot of these insights. This year, my intention word is artifact. And the reason why I chose that word is because I was thinking a lot about art versus work. And the way I define the terms now is, at the end of the day, art and work is just things you do. Right? You're acting in the world and changing the world in some kind of way. But work is about the pull. Something outside of you, like you said, extrinsic, is pulling you forward. So I have to work and do this. I have to work and call the bank, right? Whereas art is more of an internal push and something's inside of you, like do this thing because you want to. So a simple way of thinking about it is work is what you should do and art is what you want to do. But the thing is, you know, imagine I should eat food, so I should do the work of finding groceries and, you know, cooking them. But maybe just internally inside of me, I actually want to cook and express my culinary artistry. So, you know, they kind of interweave together. So I've been thinking a lot about that. And, you know, in order to create art, you have to do work. But as long as you center your intention on the art itself, that's where all your motivation comes from. So I think the main mindset strategy is to do what you want and think about, like, why are you creating this podcast, right? Why are you creating this or whatever? Like, what is the reason for it? Is it, what do you actually want to do with it? You want to, you know, have an impact on people or connect or figure out this creative, fun way of describing this idea. And, you know, when I made that video, for example, you know, there's a lot of different kind of original things too. I use emojis and different geometric shapes. And what I've come to realize is that my art form, what I most enjoy doing is taking complex ideas and then explaining them or putting them into like systematic processes for people to get value from them. And that's how I started my first business. I just, you know, I had some insights about language and I was like, oh, and I just created it. Not really like, yeah, I had some idea of like having like a 4-hour work week type business thing from it. But really, it was just a strong urge inside of me. I'm like, man, people are learning languages wrong. I want to create the system because I see it in my head. And then I just created it. And I wasn't making any money yet. So I just created it out of a pure artistic desire. Then it worked. People started paying money for it. And then it turned into a business. And I started to think of myself as a businessman. And I would say to myself, oh, I should do these things because that's what businessmen do, right? But I'd want to do all these other things. Like, no. That's what, like, you know, clowns do. You know, you should do this. And that's how that all began, started to kind of develop over the years until it eventually broke me into like a, you know, anxiety attack. And so when I realized that was the source of it, I changed my whole kind of approach. And I was like, all right, I'm not going to like do these things in the business that I think I should do. Let me find other people as much as I can to help out with those. What do I really want to do right now? Perhaps to maximize profit, I should like figure out how to do these like Facebook campaigns better. But really what I want to do is create this new product. So I'm just going to do that because screw it. Who cares? You get one life, you know? And then I would do that. And then the more I centered my attention on what I wanted to create, ironically, the more money I would make because actually the things I'm producing more of it because now I'm more energized to work and it's better quality because it's coming from the heart and not from like this kind of paycheck mentality. And yeah, it's more authentic. And yeah, and it's, at the end of the day, it's all about energy. It's all about motivation. So you're not going to be motivated to do things you should do for your whole life. But you have an infinite reservoir of motivation if you really figure out what you want to do. And yeah, so that's the real trick, kind of designing your life and your lifestyle and your work and career in such a way that you do what you want. When I say do what you want, I don't mean, oh, I just want to like party all day and hang out. I mean, like, it's hard to do what you want. It wasn't easy to make that video. It took a lot of time and most of the time it was stressed out, just like trying to figure out the right wording and the right framing and stuff like that. But the work was, that stress was worthwhile because the final product, the final artifact I made, people like it, they got benefit from it. And then I can now, you know, the thought that made me really think about this was, you know, if I was walking across the street here in Vietnam and like just got hit by a bus and I see the bus coming at me, is the thought in my head going to be, oh man, I'm going to die. I should have optimized that Facebook campaign. You know, I'm going to get an extra 3.5% conversion rate. Or is it like, oh shit, I had that video about emojis and integrity that I've been thinking about for months and I didn't get it done, you know? So that's what I find. I don't, especially when you're in business and entrepreneurship, it's very easy to like not think of yourself as an artist. We tend to think of artists as like, you know, starving artists, like the painter and the musician and stuff. And, but you know, you got managers and you have business people who enjoy that type of stuff, but you have more creative type people. And yeah, if you have to create, if you're a creative person, you have no choice but to create. The only alternative is depression.
Yeah, I sort of experienced some of this stuff too myself. And I like when you mentioned that word of the year. I had Alyssa on one of the previous podcasts, and she kind of brought that to my attention too. And I thought about that this year because, you know, she asked me, and I said, I think the word for this year is clarity. And and one part of that is I've always been running multiple businesses, you know, and people often tell me, you know, people with one business, they often tell me, oh, you should just focus on one thing. And I've always rejected that, right? But I didn't have a really good response for it. I was like, I just don't agree, you know? And recently I was watching one episode of The Prophet, and Marcus was explaining some of the ways he builds the businesses or acquires them. And he has so much clarity where one business feeds the next business, right? So it actually creates like its own sort of like this environment where they can actually make money by interchanging skills, right? Uh-huh. And I've started doing that with my stuff. And I've noticed the clients are actually enjoying moving from one company to the other based on a project that they do. And it's just, yeah, the clarity was a lot. When you fell into that anxiety, Do you think it was more because you just stopped yourself from being an artist, or was it more because you just tried to live up to whatever you're seeing other business people around you doing?
Yeah, there's several layers to it. It was in a relationship that wasn't really suited for either of us, and I wasn't being like true and authentic in that relationship, and that was a contributing factor. But when it came to work, it was putting myself under the pressure, under this kind of concept I had of how I should be. And it's all concepts, it's all made up, right? I'm like, oh, I should be this type of person. And of course, when you think about who you should be, you have all these other people you can look at, like you mentioned before, like Gary V, or, you know, maybe friends you know who are just hardworking and it just seems easy for them. And I had that, but yeah, I think the core one was the repression of the artistry. And once again, if you look at, for example, the Big Five personality model, and there's one of the dimensions is called openness. And typically people who have a high openness to experience are more creative. And when you have a high openness and a high creative aspect to you, once again, it's like a biological function. You have to create. And if you repress that, then it's just a surefire path to depression. So I was investing a lot of energy in not just repressing it, but also kind of hating it. Because I was starting to identify like, oh, this kind of, you know, scatterbrained, you know, thinking about all these different projects and never executing and blah, 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 blah. Like whenever that aspect of my core personality would show up, I would kind of get into this negative thought loop of like, you know, like, ah, that's why you don't succeed, blah, blah. And I started to subdue myself. And it wasn't until one day I was kind of at a party and a friend of mine who always kind of enjoyed my personality saw just immediately how I was just not the same. And she was like really concerned for me. And just seeing how she was instantly able to recognize that I wasn't myself really woke me up. And then I was like, this is stupid. Like, why would I like, what am I doing? You know, like, for what reason am I repressing my core self? Like, just for what? A business? For money? And it wasn't working. You know, when I did it, I wasn't doing anything. I was just repressing my core self and just failing miserably at stuff because I had no energy to actually do work. I was doing all the wrong things and like half-assedly. So it was a lose-lose. So one day I just kind of realized, I'm like, all right, well, screw it. If this is not going to work, I might as well, if I'm going to fail, I might as well be myself while I fail, you know? And then that kind of turned around and I just kind of like let myself kind of rebirth like a phoenix. And I just went full eccentric mode as I've always been since I was a kid. And then, yeah, and then things started turning around for me. I'm like, because like when I combined it with these other tools, like, you know, just do what you say you're going to do. You can be crazy eccentric multi-projects, but if you maintain that 100% integrity of word, then things start to fall into place and happen. And then you start to naturally reel in overcommitment because you're not going to overcommit if you really develop a strong sense of always fulfilling and following through on your commitments. It becomes a self-regulating. Your language becomes regulatory and self-regulating for your action. So that was the final tool for me. All the other ways of trying to be more consistent, like, oh, let me just write self-journal and like write my goals down and then do this and that. None of that stuff stuck, but language is something I've always been tuned into. And now that I'm hyper aware of the things that I say, it becomes its own self-regulating force where I don't overcommit or say things as often as I used to because it's just really important to me that I do what I say, you know? Because now I know that if I don't do what I say after spending a whole lifetime doing that, I know what the result of that is. And it's anxiety and depression. And I don't want that. I know what the result is if I don't express myself artistically and be myself, it's anxiety and depression. So it's really just a binary decision of, do I want to be anxious and depressed? No. Okay, therefore do what you say and express your art and be true in all situations and don't tell lies. Boom. Simple.
Yeah, I think the reason we overcommit, a part of it is just wanting to please people, and two is trying to just show how strong we are, or just think that's what other successful people are doing, right?
Yeah.
So it's
all external. You said it's all external.
Yeah. So one thing I've learned recently, and this is like a really simple explanation of why you shouldn't do that, is look, man, if you see someone else that you think like, oh wow, I wish I was like them, like you have to think of changing everything, right? So if you want to be like this person, everything needs to be like this person, right? Like, yeah. So like you have nothing of your own. Like all the stuff you've done and went through is gone. You are completely now like this person. If you don't want that, then just say fuck them, you know, and be yourself.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyone you look at, you can't just look at one part, one piece of anything. You have to say like, all right, if I want to be like this guy, then I got to take everything and see if I would want that. And I can't imagine anyone would do that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a major thinking process that I think is very helpful to adopt, which is when you see someone who has a strength that you admire, the natural tendency is to think that person's all strength and you don't really see what their weakness is. And you, or more importantly, you have a demon you're struggling with, like, you know, consistency, and you're just like, man, like I'm so all over the place and, you know, scattered. And here's this person, Susie, over here, and she's so well put together, and like, she just doesn't, she focuses on the one thing, she comes in on time and does her work and gets it done. Man, I wish I was more like Susie, right? I wish I was all those things. But then you get to know Susie a bit more, and then it turns out that she's been admiring you the whole time because you're so creative and energetic and people are attracted to you and you're charismatic. And, you know, meanwhile, she's been struggling her whole life with, you know, social anxiety and feeling connected to people and stuff like that, you know? And you're like, oh, wow, I never really had those problems before. I always took it for granted, but people struggle with this thing that has always been easy to me. So yeah, if you want to be Susie, then yeah, you can gain her diligence and hard work, but you might have to give up something that's always been valuable and important to you that you took for granted. And when you see that no one's perfect, everyone, no one has no weaknesses, no one has no demons, and then you can see that you have your own. So instead of everyone just admiring each other and just being envious, we should just join forces and like divvy up the work, you know?
You mentioned the consciousness journal before. What do you journal? Like, what are the daily questions or things you would write down?
Well, at that time, and I'll do this, I haven't done it in a while, but I'll do it periodically if I find myself basically just like flushing a toilet of my brain. That's basically what it is. There's nothing fancy about it. I wake up and then I'll just write, because when the thoughts are all in my head, I can't see clearly, I can't think clearly. It's actually quite quite stressful. So when I just write, and I say, what am I thinking about? And I just write. And then that will take me to the next thought. And you'll just keep writing until eventually you have nothing else to say and your mind's clear. So really, it's actually not about journaling for any sense of, you know, answering questions or figuring things out. It's more of a meditative practice where you do it and you clear your mind. But it's also very insightful when you look at it the next day and you get a sense of your state of mind over the course of time. And it's really interesting to see, especially when you're kind of a very present or all over the place kind of person, it's really hard to get a sense or get a perspective of time. And then you realize, you look at it over a course of a couple of weeks and you're like, oh wow, there's actually a cycle here where like on Monday, Tuesday, I'm super excited. And Wednesday, Thursday, I'm like, oh, this is all shit. You know, and like, it's pretty regular. And then once again, the more perspective and the more insight you have and more awareness you have, the more you're able to kind of regulate and disidentify with your moods and kind of find that equanimity, which is useful once again, not just for getting stuff done, but just living a more positive day-to-day existence.
Yeah, I've done a lot of meditation and flotation tanks, and I am not an expert at either, and I suck at both of them. But there's one thing I did learn, and it's the separation of yourself from those voices in your head, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I'm able to now, and I hope every listener can maybe figure this out for themselves too, is just visualize myself with some popcorn and being like, yo, what are these guys talking about? Like, they're dumb. You know what I mean? Like, I just, like, kind of think, like, who are these fucking guys? Like, this is the dumbest shit ever. But I listen, right? Because it keeps going. And, like, and it's funny because if you don't have that separation, you kind of flow with this voice and, like, this weird person talking shit. It's like you're kind of, like, riding the wave with them. It's like, yo, that's not me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you are not your thoughts. And that's the whole point of mindfulness meditation. And I think a lot of people try mindfulness for like a week and like blah, blah, blah. Honestly, I think it's a critical piece that everyone ought to do more of. I definitely incorporate it in my life. And it's a huge piece out of my own kind of psychological struggles last year. And I still use it all the time. The way I think of mindfulness meditation, like brushing your teeth. Over the course of the day, you just build up plaque on your teeth and then you brush it, right? And then imagine your friend comes to you and he's just like, man, I don't know, my breath just stinks so bad and I don't know what to do about it. I'm like, well, how often do you brush your teeth? Like, I don't know, like once every couple of months. It's like, well, there you go. So brush your teeth every day and then just come back and talk to me about your problems with stinky breath. And like, yeah, everyone's walking around with a stinky brain and stinky thoughts that it didn't really take the time to, you know, journal out and flush out. Or, I mean, journaling, that stream of conscious journaling is the same thing as, the same concept as mindfulness meditation. You just sit there and you're observing your thoughts, and the mere observation of them allows you to disidentify from them and separate from them so that they're not kind of subconsciously driving you towards destruction all the time.
Yeah, it's the separation, right? And it helps, helps you not being so serious about yourself, right? Because if you're able to watch this streaming thought flow and you're just sitting back and be like, dude, you're stupid, man, but keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, that's good, man, just keep going, and you just start realizing, like, dude, like, you can't take this guy seriously, you know. And at some point you're just like, I gotta get back to work, you know. But, you know, keep doing your thing, like, you know, I got you. But it's like just being, yeah, that's separating. I think that is so important, because having that voice in your head, it's, I guess the best way to explain it is feeling like you're the one talking into the mic to being 10 feet away from a speaker. That's sort of that feeling, right? Like, it's something like this voice is, in the beginning, you feel like it's all going through you and it's you. But when you can separate, you know, especially in a flotation tank, I can be like, I feel like I'm 10, 15 feet away from the speaker where this guy's talking, right? And I'm like, dude, like, you know. Like, I mean, you're saying some crazy stuff, you know, and it's cool, but, you know, like, when you're done, I would like some quiet, too. And it's funny, because at some point, the brain just gets tired, because I'm not listening anymore, and it just shuts down.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. The listener and the speaker are two separate characters, and you're still not those guys. You know, you're, like, watching the guy listening, you know, you're watching the guy speaking.
Yeah, but, you know, half of our anxiety and the depression type feelings are because we take ourselves so seriously. But once we realize that this person saying all this stuff is not us, it sort of takes that power away.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'd say all of anxiety and depression is attachment. So,
what are some of the favorite books you read? Because you mentioned stuff about psychology and cognitive behavior. Like, what are the two or three best ones you could recommend to listeners?
Let me think. Okay, well, just because we just had this discussion, I found Waking Up by Sam Harris. It's called A Guide to Spirituality Without Religion. He goes into a lot of the neuroscience and and also the philosophy, like specifically looking at different doctrines from Tibetan Buddhism and stuff. So that he really kind of explains very clearly that conversation we just had about the self and the kind of illusion of self. Even a better book I just finished recently. It's called Why Buddhism is True. And it's more just kind of looking at the actual the practices of secular Buddhism and comparing it to like evolutionary psychology and the kind of claims that it puts forth and what the research is and why they work and stuff. So that's pretty good. So that's that. And yeah, right now I'm in this meditation part of my mind because we just had a conversation about it. I'll throw one more in there. It's by this guy who worked at Google. It's called Search Inside Yourself. And that's a more fun, practical thing for people who are trying to get into mindfulness and who have not really got into it. And then try to run through my head real quick. I'm just kind of blanking out now. I read a bunch of stuff, and most of the stuff I read I don't recommend to people because it's really dense.
right. All good. While you were thinking, so the first one with Sam Harris, he actually has a pretty good podcast. So if if someone out there wants to get in and kind of figure out what he's saying, you can do that really quickly by just downloading one of those. And I'll link to that in the show notes. The other two I haven't heard of, but yeah, Sam Harris is definitely an interesting character.
Yeah, I love his podcast. If I think of more stuff, I can write it in the notes. I guess in the subject of art. Oh yeah, you know what is a really good one. If anything I said vis-a-vis your artistry and expressing yourself resonated with you, then I strongly recommend reading The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. And that will light a fire under you for sure. And I'll just leave it at that.
I enjoy that book a lot. But if you want to get even a better experience, the audiobook. Where he's actually reading it, because there's something about his voice and the way he says things that you just
can't. Actually, I don't think it was him. I don't think it was him who, because he does the voice on like other audiobooks of his, but the one who did War of Art is like, I forget his name, but he's like the number one audiobook narrator.
Okay, because I've
which is great.
I remember one of them I've listened to by the actual author because he has a couple of books out, and I was like, there's something about this guy.
Yeah, he has a good voice too. His other books, he's self-narrating,
The War of Art is a really good book because I read that too. But I would pick up one of his other audiobooks just to listen to him. You know, it's a meditative practice in itself just listening to this guy the way he reads it.
For sure.
All right, man, where can people find you?
Yeah, so the new site is mindkeepers.io, and it's new now, so it might just be like, it's a free guide you can download for now, but developing it in the coming weeks, and the whole vision is to develop tools and training to help you spend more time in a good state of mind. So yeah, mindkeepers.io, and my name's Elson Ness. Check me out, and you can email me at Edausa, Idahosa, @mindkeepers.io.
And we're out.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.